Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Friday, and welcome to Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser. Each week, Brenda brings you interesting guests and timely topics to uplift and motivate you to be all that you can be today and for all your tomorrows. Join Brenda and Alive to Thrive every Friday at noon Central Time, right here on Greater Good Ministries Radio. And now, here's Brenda Fraser.
Hello and welcome to Alive to Thrive. My name is Brenda Fraser. Happy New Year, everyone. I hope everyone had a safe and wonderful holiday. We're beginning a new year, and that music you were just listening to was called New Beginning, and it's by pianist Richard Carr, who has been on my show before. Today we have a special guest who originally came from St. Louis and is now in Detroit. But he's actually an internationally known artist. He was born in Nigeria. His name is Timothy Arikri, and his art is just dynamic and beautiful. You probably are looking at some of the beautiful pictures right now that are scrolling through on Blog Talk Radio here, but he has many more on his website. But he's an incredible artist. His paintings are bright colors, and they're ballet dancers, they're symphony musicians, but they're also butterflies, one of my favorite symbols, and just exhibiting the passion and creativity that Timothy brings to his artwork. So welcome to the Alive to Thrive, Timothy. How are you?
I'm doing just well. What a wonderful day to speak with you. Happy New Year, and this is a privilege, it's an honor. And I thank you. We have a million artists in the world, and you could pick me. Oh, Jesus, thank you so much for this opportunity. I'm doing well.
Well, that's true. I have seen a lot of art as someone who used to live in Washington, D.C. for 14 years, and I used to go to the Smithsonian Art Museums, and I lived in Denver and would go to the art museum there, and now here in Missouri. And there's something very special about your artwork. It's very bold, and I love the colors that just jump off the canvas. But I also like how you approach life, and we're going to be talking with you about some of the ways you give back and some of the things you've had to personally overcome in your life. And our show is all about, showcasing people that make a difference in the world and that have taken experiences and have transformed them into something greater and meaningful for the community. But let's just start at the beginning, shall we? You were born and raised in Nigeria, is that correct?
That's correct. I was born in the southern part of Nigeria. It's called Eku Delta State. And I was fortunate and blessed to be born in a home where I had five sisters and a brother. And I was just literally showered with so much love and being nurtured so much because I was a baby of the house.
Mm-hmm.
And my beginning phase of life has continued to take precedence in guiding and directing my life today.
And your father was a big influence. He was a Baptist minister, and probably did he expect you to follow in his footsteps to become a minister as well?
You could tell I'm laughing so hard. Well, like every parent back home, and I think in other parts of the world, The parents usually will expect the child to take the same mantle of their career or profession. And it was a little bit shocking to him and to my mother, but I'm so grateful for their support and their prayers at that time. My mother is an academician. She was an English historian, and she believed in any career. But my father was even much more receptive and open because he felt that there is beauty and there is greatness in anything. But the caution he gave me was to make sure that I still don't get over carried away with the aesthetics of art, but to find a way to still portray, project his mindset and the things I had learned from him. So, yes, he was disappointed, but also very supportive at that time when I was growing up.
Well, that's one thing that we'll talk about later in the program about your art, you know, bringing hope and harmony to the world. And some of those positive spiritual values that your dad implanted at you in a young age. But what were some of the influences from your community? I mean, I think African culture just in general is a very bright and colorful community. People wear bright color fabrics, and there's interesting patterns on the fabric. But what were some of the influences that were around you growing up?
Well, just the topography, the terrain, the color. It's a very vibrant place. Like, you have been there, and you could tell it creates so much joy. It creates so much anxious, great strive to wanting to be part of a happy mood, a happy time. You could tell the culture is still plagued by poverty in some areas and hardship. But just that area, that festive, beautiful life we had there created a kind of, it's been portrayed in what I do today in the beautiful palette that I have. I have been told that, tone it down, it's too bright. But little did they know that the culture I come from has so much influence in what I do and still continue to do today. The second thing that the culture has done for me and did for me was the life of community. You know your neighbors, you know their children, you're part of their pain and part of what brings pleasure to them. You're part of them. They had every right, they had every responsibility to take care of you. But here in the States or in the Western world, you say they're nosy. But no, they had, you know the thing, the common phrase, it takes a village. There it was actually practical and true. And so that communal life helped my career because I had support from neighbors. I had support from people who I didn't even know. I was being encouraged. Then lastly, the community itself generated a healthy competition, and it allowed for me to thrive, even though there was some there were some critics here and there. The community did help me. So the colors, the culture, the festive outlook, the bond I had, the encouragement from neighbors, and as well as the competitive nature and encouragement I had. So these did play a very great foundation and did help me in my budding stage while I was in Nigeria.
And I think that is so true about African cultures, that sense of community where people come together and take care of each other, and they have the real sensibility that what happens to you happens to me, and if they're shared resources. And even with limited resources in various parts of various countries within the African continent, people have a lot of joy, and there's a lot of praise and worship and music everywhere. I mean, I noticed that in Ghana, that every night I would hear music just coming through the air, and there's a lot of, I like that a lot. And so I'm sure with your dad being a Baptist minister, there was probably a lot of music in your home. And did you have any of your siblings, were any of your siblings musicians?
Well, if you, and to the listeners, they can get online and check what I do. There is a continuous recreation of painting that has to do with sound and music. There is something in the YouTube about few works that are inspired by sound and music. Back to your question, yes, my late brother Daniel was a classical pianist, and I envied, I cherished, I celebrated his career by continuously creating pieces to remember his memory. I do play by ear. I do wish I could be somewhat as 10% good as him, but his influence on my life has continued to show in my I Remember Dance series and also in my sound and music series that I create. My father, too, wasn't a good singer, but he made melodies and singing, like you hear people say, sing in the bathroom in your shower. But he did his singing out of a way to express himself and out of a way to reflect joy. He was a very spiritual, committed minister, and he urged his congregants to sing. He urged us to sing at home, even if it didn't make sense. And so today, I still do write several songs on my own, and while I have the time to create neural projects with children, I bring them songs for them to sing. And so my brother created a huge impact that continues to affect not just my art, but my life as well.
So I want to talk a little bit more about your brother. How many years ago was this that he passed?
Well, Brother Dan died 1998, just like yesterday to me.
Yeah,
and it has continued to, you know, grief is a very sensitive thing. I have created tons of things just to remember him, but now not in bitterness or anger or in anguish, but to continue his life work. Dan was not just a classical pianist. Dan was also pursuing his master's in divinity. In fact, he quit being a music professor in Nigeria. He left and went to be in the ministry because he wanted to be like my dad. May I go back for a second? You mentioned if my parents were very supportive. In fact, I always said while I was back home and young, Dan can be the preacher. Let him forget his music. And so eventually in the last few years of his life, he quit being a classical pianist and he became a preacher.
And so I think art, whether it's music or creative expression through painting or other visual arts, has the power to heal. So when you were dealing with his loss, because I've lost a sibling as well, how did that show up in your artwork? Were you painting more dark paintings, or were you painting things thinking about him, listening to certain types of music? Did you listen to music while you painted? Or what were some of those paintings back in 98, 99, and 2000 that were influenced by that loss?
I have rarely painted anything dark. In fact, one of the proponents and key feature of my work, it's color. I see bloom in gloom. I see pleasure in pain. Yeah, I know it's hard for someone to wrap their mind around that. The paintings I did then, yes, it had a sad undertone, but also they were portrayed, and the few of them are portrayed dark, but they are portrayed in vibrant colors. As in my belief, we don't lose our loved ones. We will see them again. I have been able to come to terms that I will see him again. And he will be of a better notion from him to see me do things that are bright, inspiring, and colorful. My family, they're very inspired people, very happy, buoyant, joyful people, even in the midst of nothing. And so it will be a slight for me to deviate from it. That's why I do projects that brings about harmony, that talks about love, that talks about happiness. But don't get me wrong, some of my works at that time, few of them, dark elements did creep in. But I'm glad to say that 98 of them reflects joy and beauty and hope and prospects and all of that.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of coming to the U.S., I think you came in 1995, That's so huge to go to a new culture. I mean, I was only in another culture for 2 weeks, and it was so hard. What was that like coming to the U.S.? What were some of your stereotypes or preconceived notions, and then what were some of your culture shocks that you thought about the U.S.?
Where do you want me to start? First of all,
what surprised you when you came here? What did you expect, and what surprised you?
Well, first of all, the notion we have back home is here is the land of honey, milk and honey, and plenty, and you could pick money in the street, and everything is accessible. Everything it's there, almost like a mini paradise or a little part of heaven. Well, to my greatest surprise, you have to work. Actually really, really work for it. I didn't believe in the disparity. I didn't believe, I thought everything was rosy. I didn't know there were those streets in East St. Louis. There were those places then run down. But then in my mind, I was able to literally slowly learn so quickly. The newness of environment, I did quickly catch on. I didn't also feel homesick at all because I had tons of people who were friends and they became families. I had tons of support. I quickly got into doing community projects, doing my mini civic creative art duties, and it has been and continue to be home to me being here. But there was a big shock. Here is the greatest shock I had all of my first time being here, was the weather. We have 70, 80 degree bright sunny days back home and ton of rainfalls, but no snow.
Yeah.
So my palette, my creative works are now beginning to reflect the cold, changing a little bit. And you can't create devoid of your environment. So I'm beginning to assimilate and learn and study, and I continue to learn as much as I can. The culture here is affected and has contributed to my growth, but it has also brought new horizon in my creative content and projection to life. I love this place so much for the enormous opportunity. If you work hard, if you persevere, if you sustain, if you have a great and better outlook to things, there is no life void of mysteries of pain and anger and losses and things falling apart. But this culture does sustain art. This culture does promote the art. This culture does embrace the art. Some of the things I lacked back home, they liked it, but they didn't buy it. They liked it, but they didn't cherish it as much. But all of that is beginning to change now. But there is a huge difference in the Western world, and I have been very fortunate to be part of this community called the United States.
And I just wanted to touch upon the sister city groups. A lot of major cities in the U.S., have sister city partnerships with other cities around the world, and I think St. Louis has something like 16 of them, one of them being with Senegal, and I was involved with the U.S.-Africa sister cities, and we have a mutual friend in Zed Manali. Want to say hi to Zed and her family. but how did you connect with the sister cities or the African cultural groups that are here? St. Louis has several African cultural groups.
Well, like I told you, I quickly came in to try to adapt, to try to not to feel, even though I felt more like a motherless child every now and then, I quickly adopted parents and guardians and people who would literally sustain and help me. One of them was Dr. Kwesi Dubate, whose wife is Zed. He saw my exhibit in the St. Louis Science Center. I think that was 1996. '96, and we clicked, and I always spoke to him and asked for advice and direction. My connection with him gave me opportunity to work with Mrs. Zed, and also I did a 24-foot mural. No, a 24-foot mural of Senegal at the World Waste Children's Museum in Chesterfield. I think that was 2000. Yeah, 2000. And I continue to do projects with communities that has the same kind of philosophy to project our culture, to sustain our society through our cultural activity. I've also been able to partake in other cultural groups like the St. Louis Black Wax Children's Black Wax Museum. I did several exhibits there. Then in other areas, in Kansas City, I did several exhibits with the Bruce Watkins Cultural Center, and also in Birmingham Civil Rights Institute in 1999. I think I did an exhibit there. But going back to culture and involving in culture, I was fortunate to be a feature artist for the St. Louis Science Center World, I think it's called One Continent, One World exhibit. I created a 24-foot mural on site and was able to highlight African culture, its beauty, its significance, and was able to help people get through some stereotypes. So try not to veer off your question, but to answer it as short as I can, though you could tell I talk very lot and I have a lot to say. I have, in my own small ways, created other things that relate to culture, but then significantly to other things related to our way of life and to create a discourse that has continued to help society. And it's not just culture. It's also the thing that relates to what dogs our society, the dark path of cold nature between man to man. I've been able to create projects that kind of brings about that discourse where we could reflect on compassion, where we could look at life in a peaceful outlook and bring a camaraderie of some kind. Because our world today, one thing that holds it together is love, it's unity, and it's the right attitude towards humanity. And so the things I do are not just only cultural, they're also things that reflect and affect our life, so to speak.
And I want to mention you, the other places your work has shown. You had mentioned the St. Louis Science Center. So is there still work there of yours on exhibit, the mural?
You have to go to the administrative floor upstairs. There is a unique, I think it's a 72-inch by, I won't remember the dimension, but there is a unique reflection or expression of mine of the St. Louis Science there. The mural I did for the St. Louis Science Center at that time, I think it was donated to Kenneth Soule's initiative of museum project. Kenneth Soule was one of the few people who were like a mentor and brother that did support and did encourage me. And the mural, it's been given to his organization, and I think it can still be seen, but I've not followed. That was a few years back. I've not followed where the mural is.
So you have work, you had work at the Forest Park Community College and the State Capitol in Jeff City. Are those pieces still there, at those two locations?
They aren't there. Usually when I do projects and work in communities, I leave some of my footprints aside. There is a unique mural that is in the St. Louis, in the Magic House St. Louis Children's Museum in Missouri. There are two unique murals. I was fortunate to work with the director of community education, Julie Tubbs, who helped in facilitating those murals. One of them is a mural I did with 100 children holding the globe. That could be seen in the Magic House renovated new section. And I think there's another mural of children riding wheels. Each of those murals reflects community involvement and reflects children's importance and their role to help uplift, to help direct our future tomorrow. There are murals in the St. Louis Basilica in Euclid. There are murals in the Pleasant Green Baptist Church. There are murals in the first community bank, one of these banks in East St. Louis. There are works in several homes too. There's a long list. I can bore you and go on and on.
No. So when I met you, you had a loft near the City Museum, and you had some beautiful pieces there. And so you had established yourself here in St. Louis, and then you relocated to Michigan and to Detroit, and you have a lot of work on display in Detroit. What was that like, sort of starting over in a new city? I mean, you've had to start over many times. What are some of the tips you can share with other people about starting over
Well, that's what life is. We can't think this is it and be so comfortable with where we are. It's a continuous struggle. We have to, first of all, have the right outlook. Like as I said earlier, you have to in some way find bloom in a gloomy situation. You find pain and pleasure. You have to stretch your mind. You have to create a thick skin. There's a common saying that I grew up listening to a lot in our home. When the going gets tough, the tough gets going, and mm-hmm. we usually sing it. There's a song here. I don't know if you're familiar with that song. But from my upbringing, yeah, I go again. There is a thing my father used to say, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he doesn't depart from it. From my upbringing and all that I was taught and nurtured by my parents, papa and mama and sisters, you have to keep on going. Life does not allow stagnation. You have to find resources even in where there is none. You have to start somewhere or continue somewhere. The longest journey, they say, starts with a single step. You have to create that threshold and believe and hope, but then work towards it. How did I get through starting all over again? Is all these things I've mentioned. I'm so much committed in developing myself. I spend hours and time and resources in doing so. I'm so much committed in wonder and venture. And so coming to a new place to me was easy in some sense. The only difference is I miss those who I had bonded with. But then again, I made new friends and new opportunities and took great belief and took great stewardship and took great ownership of being part of this wonderful, beautiful city called Detroit. Mentioning about the things I've done here in Detroit, there are quite a lot. I don't usually want to blow my trumpet or talk a lot, but you could see some of my works on permanent exhibit at the Detroit Public Museum, Public Library. You could see some of my works at that are displayed at several restaurants, but you could see some of my works that are owned and displayed at community college, university college offices, and there are even some recipients of my work I do not know of, which may sound as a bad thing to say, but there are lots of places that have my work on display. Now, currently, my exhibit is being shown at Pierre Paul Gallery in Ann Arbor, where there are over a dozen or so works that could be seen. And I had done works with the Allen Park School in close to Dearborn area. I got several kids to work on a compassion project. I had also done works with the Mansouri School somewhere in West Bloomfield area, Mansouria. Pardon me, I can't pronounce the word too well, but I had worked with children to create murals. Create murals and create paintings that bring society together. And I'm still formulating several projects that I will still do here in this community. I've also had the opportunity to have several exhibits here. One of the places I've had exhibits at is the Detroit Athletic Club. I've done exhibits at the Carl Center. I've done exhibit at the Charles Wright Museum downtown. I've also done little pockets of exhibits at schools and also at restaurants and any way that opens the door to accept my work. I've been fortunate to be part of several artists that do project and promote art in the Governor's Mansion. So every year I'm part of that group of artists that reflect our community. I may veer off a little bit here. Being here for several years, since 2008, I've been able to create about 60 works that reflect Detroit. And initially, while I was coming here, people laughed at the idea of coming here and said, it's all gloomy and down. It's really not. There's a resurgence here. There's beauty here. This is a place where you have a creative, beautiful environment of wonderful, enormous aesthetic, rich culture, rich arts, and I'm slowly tapping into it as best I can and trying to contribute. And so I have created 60 works or more, several murals that reflects the resurgence of the city. And a way to give back, I'm trying to put together in the second quarter of the year a book called Detroit on My Mind that helps reflect inspiration from the city, that helps sustain a creative discourse from the city, that helps it kind of project a somewhat, you could call it a coffee book, but to me it's their diary of aesthetic value that is supposed to be of inspiration to our society here. Looks like I should let you talk because I would just bore you if I keep going on and on.
No, it's all very interesting, but we do have to take a short station identification and a break for a PSA. So we encourage everyone to stay with us. You're listening to Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser, and my interview today, my guest is Timothy Ariki, an artist, lives in Detroit from Nigeria, who's prolific in his creations, and we're going to continue talking about humanity and love and unity through art and some other inspirational things. So stay with us. We'll be right back in just a couple of seconds.
You might know me. I'm 50 Cent. You may follow my tweets, my Facebook friends. Odds are a few in 6 degrees separate us. We're that close. What's crazy is 1 in 6 don't know where their next meal is coming from. These are your coworkers, your neighbors, your friends. Hunger's too close for us to ignore. So visit feedingamerica.org/hunger and find your local food bank to see how you can make a difference. From one close friend to another, let's do this. I'm 50 Cent, and together we are Feeding America.
A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Have you heard of Modere yet? Modere is a new online retail brand for today's modern shopper. We bring stylish, safe, exclusive products for everyday living. At Modere, things are different. We hold ourselves to a higher standard of being modern, accessible, and ahead of the curve. Modere offers ultra-premium products such as hair care, skin care, and household essentials at crazy affordable prices. Most importantly, Modere's products are safe and non-toxic. In fact, Modere makes some of the safest and most effective clean label products on the market today. With free shipping on most orders, a 30-day money-back guarantee on all products, and huge discounts for repeat customers, trying Modere truly is a win-win. Go to Modere.com right now. That's Modere.com. Again, that's Modere.com. And use the promo code THRIVE for savings up to $25 off your first order. Again, it's Modere.com. And use the promo code THRIVE. You'll love the free shipping and the big savings off all the products you desire for a modern life. Modere. We are stylish, safe, smart.
You're listening to Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser on GGM. And now, back to the show.
Hello and welcome back to Alive to Thrive. My name is Brenda Fraser, and we're with you each Friday, 12 noon Central, and archivable. All the programs can be listened to any time of the day, and you can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/AliveToThrive. My guest today is Timothy Arike, and he's an incredible artist that paints landscapes and scenes of St. Louis architecture and just uses a lot of color. He uses a beautiful medium, and also does ceramics. Is that correct, Timothy? You also paint other things besides large-scale paintings?
That's correct. I have some ceramic work that I do, and I also lately have been delving into some wood sculpture. I call them kinetic arts, wherein I cut out shapes and forms, and I'm trying to every day learn and retrain myself and take advantage of this wonderful environment that is so resourceful. And it's not just painting murals, trying to do some other things too.
Well, tell us about the wood carving. That's interesting. What kind of wood do you use and where do you get it?
Well, I go to a hardware store like Home Depot and I just get a piece of plywood and you kind of create incisions and cut out shapes. I have done some butterfly chandeliers and some butterfly hanging. I've also done what I call my own dream catcher. Then I've done things that are ballet forms. Later in life, I've started creating prototypes that will be converted to plexiglass. You know, we live in a very resourceful time, and it is not being a jack-of-all-trade thing. It's being able to diversify. If you have the creative entity in yourself, you could translate, you could change it to something else and do something else. For instance, if you're musical, if you could play one instrument, if you play one wind instrument, you could almost play the rest of it all. If you could tap dance, you could do a African dance. If you could speak, you could literally speak any of the languages. So what I'm trying to do, and what I continue to encourage other people to do, is diversify. It's nothing wrong. No need to be fearful and just be in your comfort zone. Experiment, explore, and that's why I have delved into kinetic arts. And I've delved into ceramics. There's also something new I'm trying to get my hang on, but waiting for means of getting through the hurdles, and that is trying my hands on glass blowing, and trying my hands also on. It is too much for me to let go of the what I've been endowed with. I'm somewhat musically inclined, so try this year to learn the violin, though I used to play the guitar. So I'm trying to take that fret attributes of a guitar to a violin, and I play by ear. So it's not just painting. I also sing, even though it's like a croak voice. I write things for children, and quietly I'm putting together most of these projects I've done that reflects harmony and peace and love into a musical format. And so I need to learn how to sight read. I don't want to give all this to people to do for me. I want to be part of the learning and take pleasure in creating some of these other things myself.
Well, I want to talk about some of your themes because, you know, cityscapes we mentioned, and we only touched a little bit on the floral and the nature. And of course, I love butterflies. And butterflies have so much symbolism of transformation. What attracted you to do butterflies in so many beautiful colors and sizes? But what does the butterfly mean to you?
In the year 2000, I came from home. I had no parents here. And so when anything happens, I quickly call my father for advice. And he was a very knowledgeable man. And in the year 2000, I had some really hard times adapting and some personal issues going on in my life, and I called him. And he veered off all of a sudden and said, "Son, have you painted a butterfly before?" I'm like, "What?" And I said, that's that insignificant little thing. And he hushed me right quickly there and says, well, listen to me. And I, you know, you don't contest. And I listened. And he said, the butterfly is a very unique creature. Look at it. Observe it. Create one big one and tap into the beautiful, intricate color of it. I said, okay, wait a minute. Everything you tell me is not just for say. Is there any lessons here? I said, of course. And he says, there are a lot of P's in the butterfly. I'm like, P's? P as in Peter. P as in Paul. I'm like, okay, so what is it? He said, our life can be clustered today by pain, by headache, by hardship. Look at the pain right in the eye. You have to make sure you persevere. You have to make sure you go through those headaches and those struggles. I'm like, okay. He said, so the butterfly goes through beautiful transformation to get to where it becomes. And he's filled of stories and folklore mindset when he talks. He told me a story of a little child who tried to fast forward the pupa, you know, the stage of a butterfly, so that the wings could come and fly and just evolve quickly. And said, do you know what happened to that butterfly? I said, no. The butterfly ended up having a broken wing. And so there is the egg stage, he told me, the larva stage, the pupa, and the adults. I almost wanted to say, Papa, I got it, but I couldn't say that to him. And he says, you have to try those attributes in your life. You have to not just look at the product, but go through the process. You have to be the persevere. You have to painstakingly look through everything you go through, but in a very right, logical manner. And so the butterfly to me today, it's not just an aesthetic statement. It also is a great outlook that I have, and it's for me to know that there's transformation tomorrow. It gives me hope, and it should give people hope, too, to look at even the smallest things and see how they could transcend it and even hold on and keep on keeping on. And I've been painting butterfly paintings since 2000, and I think I have a ton of them. No year goes by I don't create one. And they're meaningful, they're beautiful. Several of them are in hospitals, in private homes. So I've enjoyed painting them. Thanks to my father for his advice.
Oh, that was a great story. And so beautiful floral in nature, beautiful roses and bright colors. And all your paintings are very uplifting to look at. So you can't be in a bad mood and look at a painting of yours without getting in a happy mood. So there's also landscapes. Do you take trips out to various landscapes to be inspired by nature?
I used to travel a lot. I of course I do, but lately I now do what I call my mind space. I used to travel a lot. I take photographs, but then I studied them and translate them. Yes, I do. While I was in St. Louis, I visited the Butterfly House a lot. I visited it. In fact, I did an exhibit at the Butterfly House, and I visited the Botanic Building in Forest Park. I also did an exhibit there. I check out nature, even the smallest things, wood grains, tree bark, even sand and grass. There's beauty, there is resource all over nature. And in fact, mentioning that, I'm trying to put together another book called Nature's Bliss, which will have compilations of butterflies, compilations of flowers, and elements like water, and things that will bring calm, and things that people will look in their hard day or bad day, and trying to paint a smile on people's hearts. So, yes, I go around looking for inspiration from anything.
But let's talk about going within and traveling within and that mind space that you mentioned, because that very much interests me. Do you meditate and have quiet time during the day to allow inspiration to come to you?
Of course. The biggest thing I do a lot is pray and talk to myself. Everything starts with the self. No matter how great support you may get, which I do get from a lot of people and friends, if I don't clear my mind and create that clean, receptive place, nothing works. If I don't have if I can't make peace with friends and clear my heart, nothing works. So, yes, I do meditate and pray. I listen to a lot of classical music and jazz. I also listen to contemporary music and gospel music. But not to make people subscribe to any of this. The only thing I will encourage people to do who are not necessarily in the creative business is find what excites you. Find what motivates you, but looking into yourself and let it start from you. There can be no better creative process coming into being without the self being informed, being cleared, being in tune to wanting to assimilate things, wanting to create things, wanting to live our lives. Clutter do bother us a lot here. And so I meditate quite often. I listen to great music, and that literally, I think, could be seen in what I do.
Well, it definitely, I think someone could even meditate by looking at one of your abstract paintings and just sort of staring at it, because I do want to encourage people listening to go to your website, timothyoriki.com, and that's spelled Timothy in the way people spell Timothy, and then O-R-I-K-R-I.com, and look at his abstracts, because you could meditate for a while on just one painting, and that's probably the benefit of having painting within someone's home on their walls, is that you could really meditate on a painting and see different things. Everyone sees something different, I'm sure, in the abstracts. It's different colors or different images jump out at people based on their frame of mind or what the messages they need to receive for that day. So, but I like the thought about going within, that we don't have to always travel externally or go to other places for inspiration, that the voice of God or someone's creative source or whatever someone calls it can speak to us from within, and it's getting quiet to listen to that voice, that inspiration, and then trusting it. And so many artists, I think, in the beginning when they start out, need to trust their own voice and not compare. I was just talking with an artist recently about this. She's like, well, I need to look online at what other people are doing and look at. I said, no, absolutely not. Comparison is the death of joy. And if you cannot, you can look at other people's art and say, oh, that's interesting, but you can't start with that and then go and do your own art. You need to just create your art and see what comes out of you. And so many times I think people want to copy and imitate rather than trust themselves.
That's true. And in fact, we're all unique. There's beauty in everyone. It's very sad how we let society cloud and we deviate. I know there's a famous saying that everybody's taking, just be yourself. The great disadvantage to ourselves is to, not be ourselves, not look into ourselves and evolve and create from ourselves. And it's good to get inspired, but then create your own niche, find your own path, look for your own voice, and, expand on it and make that beauty that sits in you come out. It won't come if we, go under the shadow of people or just literally copy. So you're right about that.
And so I do want to make sure we touch upon one topic before we close the program today, and that's the work you did with Martin Luther King commemorative paintings, and just the what you mentioned earlier in the program about work that you have in Birmingham, but just the role of your art with civil rights movement. Can you talk a little bit about that and how the Martin Luther King piece came to be?
Yes, I can. I worked retail while I was in St. Louis a few years ago. I worked in Neiman Marcus for about 7 years, and one day I was at work. The president of Harris Stowe State College, Dr. Givens, came in and said, I've followed your career for a while. Every year I celebrate Dr. King in my college. Will you be interested in creating an exhibit? That was 2002. And I frantically said yes, and that was the beginning of me creating Dr. King's images. Dr. King, to me, was not just only a civil rights activist. It's like more than an icon to me. I studied his sermons. I listened to as much tape. I got a lot of guidance from Reverend Alex Peterson in Missouri, and I crafted all those paintings of Dr. King. And like as I tell people a lot, there are no more kings. We are the kings. There are no more Rosa Parks. We are the Parks. There are no more civic rulers we should look into. We should create. We should be involved in societal building. We should be involved in creating unity. We should be involved in celebrating diversity. We should be involved in practicing love and tolerance and acceptance. And so it's our civic, moral responsibility. There's a word as humanistic responsibility to be part of it. I can't preach a sermon like my father, but I can paint images that create inspirational value and virtue. I can't preach a sermon of love, but I can paint love. I can preach a sermon of unity from my background. We all have some resources, something that we could do. Our world is falling apart. Our world is in a very sad coalition path, and so it's our duty. For instance, Ferguson, pardon me if I have to eject that. It is our moral obligation, it's our societal obligation to do something, it's our ethical obligation to do something. But do what? What are people doing with their career? Not just for the imam and the preachers. It's not just for the civic leaders and the commissioners and the police. No, it starts from the individual. Every family, every child needs to be pushed into the mindset of being part of societal growth. That is why I take you back again to the Magic House Children's Museum in St. Louis. There's a mural of children, seven children holding the globe from falling. Each child needs to be taught love, harmony, tolerance, unity, diversity. Each child needs to be taught how we could keep society together. We can't use our art. We can't use our pulpit. We can use our career. We can use what we have to cause more dissension, but to create a collective, wonderful harmony and beauty. Every one of us owes it. And here, back to your question, all of this comes from me being part of the Dr. King exhibit that I've been able to put together from Missouri, and I've been able to do this exhibit here in several parts of Detroit. And it is a beautiful thing I learned from just creating those images of Dr. King. There are some of them in a retirement home. There are some of them in public places. And sadly to say, there are some of them in storage. So we owe it to society to do something. I'm doing the little I can. Every little spark, every little light does help drive the darkness. And I'm using my art as a means to help society and to make a difference of some sort.
I love it. I think that's just so important, that to use your art to help society in some sort. And everybody can do that in their corner of the world. And they, people have a choice to either engage in negativity or engage in positivity. And you can change the dialogue. You can change friends. You can, you know, not engage in negativity on social media. So there's all kinds of ways. But to bring more beauty into the world, whether it's through art or music or some creative expression or through writing. And with this being the new year, you know, a lot of friends of mine are getting together and doing vision boards and writing their affirmations for the year or writing their goals. You can do that visually in pictures. Whether you're a skilled artist such as Timothy is, or, you know, just cutting pictures out of magazines and putting those pictures on a board to visualize what you want to see manifest in your life. And so surrounding yourself with good art, like Timothy's and other artists that we feature on this program, can help inspire. Now, the Martin Luther King piece you did, one of them, I love, had end with this quote, because it is really powerful. And it said, sooner or later, all the people of the world will have to discover a way to live together in peace and thereby transform this pending cosmic elegy into a creative psalm of brotherhood. I refuse to accept the view that mankind is so tragically bound to the starless midnight of racism and war that the bright daybreak of peace and brotherhood can never become a reality. That is why right temporarily defeated is stronger than evil triumphant. And it goes on to say other things, but I mean, the words of King and Gandhi and other great leaders, to be surrounded by that and to be listening, there are so many now tapes that you can listen in your car to positive messaging, and turn off the radio and just go inside and listen to your thoughts. But I try to give people some practical tips. And do check out Timothy's website, timothyoriki.com. You can order a reprint or a poster if you're not ready yet to invest in a piece of art. But there are lots of things of all price ranges from his website that you can look at. And follow him on Facebook and LinkedIn. And there are some YouTube videos, too, about him speaking about his art. And if you're in the Detroit area, you can arrange to go to a workshop or take some art lessons and just find your own creative expression, whatever that is in your life. Any closing thoughts, Timothy, before we wrap up?
I have to thank you for this opportunity, and I have to also thank you for your dedication and your love for Africa, for being able to go to Ghana and for what you're doing. I will like to assist in the project you're doing come April. I'd like to be involved in doing so. But most especially, I would like to say that we are endowed with enormous opportunity to thrive and not just to live our life. I am grateful for this honor you've given to me, and I'm also grateful for those who've tuned in. Let's make the world a better place. Of course we can, with anything we can. Let's live in harmony and celebrate diversity. Let's help our society from falling apart. But lastly, I'm putting a book together called My Creation Story. It portrays what the world is today and what it was in the beginning of creation. The dialogue I'm trying to resonate is we are either helping society get better or getting worse. So what side are you? Thank you so much for this wonderful opportunity. I'm grateful.
Well, thank you, and you have a blessed new year. I'm sure our paths will cross again. And if you're in the Detroit region visiting or traveling through, check out Timothy's work at one of the many public institutions. We're going to end with a piece by Yo-Yo Ma. We'll be back next Friday. Please share this program with your friends and encourage them to listen to the archived version of this interview. Thanks, everyone. Have a good weekend.
Thank you. Thank you.